The story of the inspector was true. The rumour received more and more confirmation each day, and at last we all knew for a fact that an important general was coming from Petersburg to inspect the whole of Siberia, that he had already arrived, that he was by now in Tobolsk. Every day fresh reports reached the prison. News came too from the town. We heard that everyone was frightened and flustered and trying to put on a good show. It was said that the higher officers were preparing receptions, balls, festivities. The convicts were sent out in parties to level the road to the fortress, to remove hillocks, to paint the fences and posts, to repair the stucco, to whitewash. In fact, they tried in a short space of time to set right everything that had to be on show. The convicts understood all this very well, and talked with more and more heat and defiance among themselves. Their fancy took immense flights. They even prepared to make a complaint, should the general inquire whether they were satisfied. Meanwhile, they quarrelled and abused each other. The major was in great excitement. He used to visit the prison more frequently. He shouted at people and attacked them, sent prisoners to the guardhouse more frequently, and was more zealous about cleanliness and decency. It was just at that time, as luck would have it, that a little incident took place which did not, however, as might have been expected, disturb the major at all, but on the contrary, gave him positive satisfaction. A convict stuck an awl into another's chest, just above the heart. The convict who committed this crime was called Lomov. The man who was wounded was called Gavrilka among us. He was an inveterate tramp. I don't know if he had any other name. Among us, he was called Gavrilka. Lomov had been a prosperous peasant from the K district of T province. All the Lomovs lived together as a family, the old father with his brother and three sons. They were well-to-do peasants. It was rumoured all over the province that they were worth as much as 100,000 rubles. They tilled the land, tanned skins, traded, but did more in the way of money-lending, sheltering tramps, receiving stolen goods, and such pursuits. Half the peasants in the district were in their debt and in bondage to them. They were reputed to be shrewd and crafty peasants, but at last they became puffed up with pride, especially when one important person in the district took to staying at their house when he travelled. He saw the old father and took to him for his quick-wittedness and practical ability. They began to think they could do what they liked and ran greater and greater risks in illegal undertakings of all sorts. Everyone was complaining about them. Everyone was wishing the earth would swallow them up. But they held their heads higher and higher. They cared nothing for police captains and excise officials. At last they came to grief and were ruined, but not for any wrongdoing, not for their secret crimes, but for something of which they were not guilty. They had a big outlying farm several miles from the village. Once they had 6 Kyrgyz living there in the autumn, who had worked for them as bondsmen under a contract for many years. One night, all these Kyrgyz labourers were murdered. An inquiry was made. It lasted a long time. Many other misdeeds were discovered in the course of the inquiry. The Lomovs were accused of murdering their labourers. They told the tale themselves, and everyone in the prison knew about it. It was suspected that they owed a great deal to their labourers, and as they were greedy and miserly in spite of their wealth, they had murdered the Kyrgyz to escape paying them the arrears of their wages. During the trial and legal proceedings, they lost all their property. The old father died, the sons were scattered. One of the sons and his uncle were sent to our prison for 12 years. And they were completely innocent, after all, as far as the death of the Kyrgyz was concerned. Afterwards, a notorious rogue and tramp called Gavrilka turned up in our prison, a brisk and lively fellow who was responsible for the crime. I did not hear, however, whether he admitted it himself, but the whole prison was convinced that he had a share in the murder. Gavrilka had had dealings with the Lomovs when he had been a tramp. He had come to the prison for a short term as a deserter from the army and a tramp. He had murdered the Kyrgyz with the help of 3 other tramps. They had hoped to plunder the farm and carry off a lot of booty. The Lomovs were not liked among us. Why, I don't know. One of them, the nephew, was a fine fellow, clever and easy to get on with. But his uncle, who stuck the awl into Gavrilka, was a stupid and quarrelsome man. He had quarrelled with many of the prisoners before and had often been soundly beaten. Everyone liked Gavrilka for his cheerful and easy temper. Though the Lomovs knew that he was the criminal and that they were suffering for his crime, they did not quarrel with him. although they were never friendly with him, and he took no notice of them either. And suddenly a quarrel broke out between Gavrilka and the Uncle Lomov over a most disgusting girl. Gavrilka began boasting about her favours. Lomov was jealous, and one fine day he stabbed him with the awl. Though the Lomovs had been ruined by their trial, yet they lived in comfort in the prison. They evidently had money. They had a samovar, drank tea. Our major knew about it and hated the two Lomovs intensely. Everyone could see that he was always finding fault with them and trying to get them into trouble. The Lomovs put this down to the major's desire to get a bribe out of them, but they never offered him a bribe. Of course, if Lomov had driven the awl a little further in, he would have killed Gavrilka. But the assault ended in nothing worse than a scratch. It was reported to the major. I remember how he pranced in, out of breath, and obviously delighted. He treated Gavrilka with wonderful gentleness, quite as if he had been his own son. "Well, my boy, can you walk to the hospital or not?" "No, you'd better drive. Get the horse out at once," he shouted in excited haste to the sergeant.
"But I don't feel anything, Your Honour. He only gave me a little prick, Your Honour."
You don't know, my dear boy. We shall see. It's a dangerous place. It all depends on the place. He struck you just above the heart, the ruffian. And you, he roared, addressing Lomov. Now I'll make you smart. To the guardhouse.
And he certainly did make him smart. Lomov was tried, and though the wound turned out to be the slightest of pricks, the intent was unmistakable. The criminal's term of imprisonment was increased, and he was given 1,000 strokes. The major was thoroughly satisfied. At last, the inspector arrived. The day after he arrived in the town, he visited our prison. It was on a holiday. For some days before, everything in the prison had been scrubbed, polished, cleaned. The prisoners were freshly shaven. Their clothes were white and clean. In the summer, the regulation dress for the prisoners was a white linen jacket and trousers. Every one of them had a black circle about 4 inches in diameter sewn on the back of his jacket. A whole hour was spent in drilling the convicts to answer properly if the great man should greet them. There were rehearsals. The major bustled about like one possessed. An hour before the general's appearance, the convicts were all standing in their places like posts with their arms held stiffly by their sides. At last, at 1 o'clock, the general arrived. He was a general of great consequence, of such consequence that I believe all official hearts must have throbbed all over Western Siberia at his arrival. He walked in sternly and majestically, followed by a large suite of the local authorities in attendance on him, several generals and colonels among them. There was one civilian, a tall and handsome gentleman in a swallow-tail coat and low shoes, who had come from Petersburg too, and who behaved with extreme freedom and independence. The general frequently turned to him, and with marked courtesy. This interested the convicts immensely, a civilian and treated with such esteem and by such a general too. Later on, they found out his surname and who he was, but there were a number of theories. Our major, wearing a tight uniform with an orange-coloured collar, with his bloodshot eyes and crimson pimply face, did not, I fancy, make a particularly agreeable impression on the general. As a sign of special respect to the distinguished visitor, he had taken off his spectacles. He stood at a little distance, stiffly erect, and his whole figure seemed to be feverishly anticipating the moment when he might be wanted to fly to carry out His Excellency's wishes. But he was not wanted. The general walked through the prison ward in silence. He glanced into the kitchen. I believe he tried the soup. I was pointed out to him. They told him my story, and that I was of the educated class.
"Ah," answered the general. "And how is he behaving himself now?"
"So far, satisfactorily, Your Excellency," they answered him. The general nodded, and 2 minutes later he went out of the prison. The convicts were, of course, dazzled and bewildered, but yet they remained in some perplexity. Complaints against the major were, of course, out of the question, and the major was perfectly certain of that beforehand.